Yes, I'll do it in English because our speaker for today is not well familiar with Norwegian yet. Welcome to the monthly Noog meeting. After the meeting, we will head over to Alexandros to grab a snack and have something to drink. Please join us over there. I'll pass around a list where you can put your name down so we get a count on how many was actually showing up for this meeting. When all the admin details are over with, I'm happy to present this meeting's topic, all the way from Russia to meet his destiny, I guess. Has we've been able to get one long time, well, in relative terms, been working on free software for at least 5 years, both in Russia and here in Norway, the developer of Open Inkpot. Give your hands to Mikael.
Thank you. Is this thing on? Yeah, no? Great. So my name is Michael. I am the leader and founder of Open Inkpot project, which is the which is a project for developing firmware for ebook readers. It's a free software, and it's well one of the kind in the world actually, because of reasons I'll speak about later. Here's an overview of talk. I'll just go through the state of ebooks and e-readers in the current world, with their closedness, openness, and so on. I'll say some words about e-ink. And why it's so hard to run just Android on your e-ink device and be with it. And then I'll go to the Open Inkpot, the project, how to use it, how to develop for it, what's in it for the hacker, and how to contribute to it. Okay, let's start with the e-books. There are several big sellers for e-books. There are a lot of small sellers for e-books in the world. They all popped up in last several years, right when the e-ink readers started appearing on the market. They mostly sell their e-books not really as a commodity, not really as a something that could be sold. They actually lease the books to you. You license the books, and it's linked to your accounts, and it's linked to your devices. It's somehow. Sometimes it's DRM. Sometimes it's not DRM, but the sellers rely on the laws to prevent you from tampering with books and just giving it to everybody for free in torrents. So the state of e-books market's not really that shiny from the perspective of a hacker, perspective of free software enthusiast and open content enthusiast. There are exceptions to this rule. For example, in Russia, the biggest seller of books, Litres, sells the books in DRM-free format, and he doesn't care about copyright at all because, everything that goes sold will be parted in a week. There are a lot of ebook formats, and it's much worse than audio or video formats because you've got a lot of formatting which is not really mappable one to one from one format to another. You've got text formats which are not really convertible to anything else. You've got the XML-based formats, HTML. You've got images like PDF and so on, and you've got a really huge amount of stuff which was developed for the last 10 years on PDAs, phones, Java embedded stuff, and so to get your books in some good format, you need to jump through hoops, or find a reader which reads everything. Otherwise, you just risk not having your library being readable just a few years later. It's actually not really bad these days. It was much worse maybe 3 or 4 years years before, when there was no common standard. Everybody liked it. So every vendor implemented something strange, something really horrible to work with. Nowadays they've got EPUB, which is an XML-based semantic text formatting for fiction books. Everybody likes it, except that everybody implements an interesting and not really documented extensions to it. So now it's, well, now it's a plethora of EPUB subformats out in the world. Yeah?
There's a quick question. What kind of extensions are we talking about?
Yeah, what kind of extensions are we talking about, by the way?
They like their own encryptions. They like their own metadata, just to index something in libraries. What else? They like their own DRM schemes, not signatures, and really stuff for keeping books back to them, not open. The text and, well, the images inside are okay. You just need to be really sure that in country you live in, it's okay to strip the DRM part. Well, so there are regional peculiarities. In Russia, there is AFB2 format, which is really popular, and it's really similar to EPUB, and it's not really good that they've got invented another format, not knowing anything about AFB2, and there are huge libraries with AFB2 books in Russia, and other, well, ex-USSR countries. In Chinese, they got some very exotic stuff. I didn't ever touch it because we've got a Chinese guy who fixes all the stuff which comes up with their strange formats, but they've got something their own too. It's not EPUB. So, well, but mostly it's, well, several big formats with variations in nowadays. Well, if you discount HTML and plain text, which is plenty of text still around. For technical ebooks, it's much better. It's PDF and DJU, everyone knows and everyone likes. But, well, for small books, for small readers, I will show it later, it's hard to render them, actually. And it's much worse for e-ink, due to reasons I will talk about later. The readers, well, there are three big parts of big divisions of readers. It's tablets. Everyone knows tablets. There are a lot of them popping up recently. There are phones and PDAs, which were quite popular before there were specialized readers, and dedicated e-readers, mostly e-ink based nowadays. Well, tablets are big. They've got LCD screen, which is good because they've got really quick response times. You could just zoom and scroll the pages around, so it's really good for big PDFs, deja vu, and so on. But they got really small battery life because of LCD, which eats a lot of energy. So, well, and it usually runs regular operating system because their hardware is really, well, okay. It's just desktop, something like desktops. So they don't need a specialized software to display some PDF. Yeah, you know how it looks. Phones and PDAs are, well, you also know how do they look like. They are okay, they are small, you can carry them into the pocket. But the problem is, if you use your phone as book reader, it just discharges in a few hours. And you don't have a phone. And PDAs are just disappeared from the market. So, well, you couldn't anymore buy PDA and use it to read books. Yes, you know how do they look like. And dedicated e-book readers, that's what my talk actually is about. It's small devices. They use e-ink for the screen, which is really strange output device. They are good for fiction due to, well, strangeness of e-ink. You can't really display big PDFs and deja vus on them. And they've got a really long lifetime from battery. They could last for weeks, for months if you don't really read on them, just skim around. Well, it's kind of devices usually you could usually find on the market. It's Sony device, which is, well, 3 years old. It's Azbuka device, which runs opening port, and it's, well, it's sold with opening port installed. It was the project the opening port team was working on. There are another Sony device. It's Amazon device. That's probably, well, they all look the same. They're black and white, and the pictures are not really good. I would love to show them, show devices to you, but, well, I forgot them. There are two big types of devices, dedicated devices. One is tightly controlled. It's what I told you in the beginning. E-book sellers really like to control the devices. They really want to control the content, so they do anything they could. They lock down the firmware. They encrypt their bootloaders. They strip down the formats available on the book, so you have either to convert or you have to buy books from the online store, link it to the device. Amazon is, as the extreme example of tightly controlling the device, even removed 1984 from their device. It was really a double plus and good sell, double plus and good purchase for the users. Well, they could find a better book to remove, actually. Another one is Free for All. It's very popular in countries where you don't have so strict copyright rules, or the copyright rules don't really enforceable, like in ex-USSR on China or India, you know. Well, those are really, well, they look like cheap Chinese MP3 players. They play everything, they don't need anything special on the computer to put your songs on or to put your books on. They could, I don't know, play FLAC. They could display some weird formats from China, from Russia, from everything. But they really they don't look good. The quality of the hardware is quite bad. But, well, it's less dangerous to hack on them because Sony will not go and sue you. Oh, so about the ink. I should have show it to you, but, well, I will have to describe it. It's a grayscale screens, which quite high DPI, so you could have a look at it and just don't see a difference between a printed page and screen. And it's very, very slow. It takes a second to change the image on screen. So you have to have, well, some specialized GUI for it. What's the most important, it doesn't consume power while it's static. So you just turn the page, the device goes to sleep and doesn't consume power at all. It's really good for reading books because you don't turn the page all the time, you just read the books. And, well, to turn the page is quite not infrequently. Well, because of all this cool stuff and because of real slowness, you have to write our own software, our own GUI to draw it all, because you can't really scroll the page on ink. You can't really pop up the menu with animation on it. You can't have a cursor. You can't really zoom and pinch, zoom by pinch, scroll screens, and so on. You have to have a lot of keys around the device, which do a lot of functions, and you have to have a special GUI to draw it all. We need to patch even kernel to make devices go to sleep and to not drain battery. And we need to make sure our grayscale stuff works properly. And it was one of an interesting findings by me. I figured out that X still works okay on grayscale devices. It doesn't consume much memory doing it. Well, it just runs okay, happily going back to the black and white if you want to. It's like, well, it's like 1980 again, when they just started X and it was black and white screens. And by the way, the XR community is not really happy about it. They say, wow, this guy came up, and we have to keep this compatibility stuff around for a long time. And we thought we could just drop it all and keep 32-bit colors everywhere. So, well, due to all the reasons for having a special software for on ink, I had to start this project because there was no open firmware for readers before, and the existing firmwares are not really good if they go from free-for-all devices or really tightly locked in if it's from devices controlled by companies. It's open project, it's free software, it's not really dependent on any vendor. Well, we had this Azbuka project, but it didn't have any authority on the project. And we are focused on fiction books at the moment because, you know, e-ink is not very well suited for scrolling around big PDFs. Well, right now it's really good at reading fiction books. Users from the e-book reading community say it's really customizable, it's really powerful, they really like it. And the vendors who provide their firmware don't really spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to properly render pages. They have some strange margins, they have strange font sizes, strange font families. So we provide all the hooks and customizations for each user to just adjust the page how he or she likes it. We use existing readers, which are really good at displaying a lot of various formats all around the world, which were collected for the whole lifetime of these readers. It's interesting that both readers we use were written in Russia. I don't know why, but it happened. It's okay for reading technical books because, well, we do it as well as we can. Scrolling is horrible, so we have to jump around the pages. The hardware is not so fast, so rendering PDFs and deja vus is time-consuming process, so you have to wait for panning the pages. But it's okay. You just say that some firmwares which are produced by companies are worse at it as well. Well, it's okay for hacking because we've got all the stuff you need to just SSH to device and run some strange stuff for it. Some people use it as a second screen. They really like, well, just open the X display on it and, well, move some pages with browser for reference manuals and so on around. Just to have additional screens, you could just have a e-book reader beside your monitor. Well, there are two main working targets at the moment. It's two Chinese e-book readers. They are sold under lots of different names all around the world. You could have a look at the hardware page. There is a lot of aliases for those readers, so you could probably get one if you want to. We have some work in progress for other devices. Probably there will be a sort of target, maybe this month, maybe next one. And we've got this Azbuka stuff, well, which ships with OpenQuad pre-installed, and you could buy it from Ukrainian vendor if you want to. Unfortunately, we don't have OpenQuad for the bigger players like Saudi and Amazon, but well, we hope to. Every year we use a chance to participate in Google Summer of Code. Every year we find a student who promises to port an OpenQuad to another device, and every year he fails, but nobody knows why, but well, it happens. So what's inside? Inside it's really usual Linux. We got BusyBox. We got Linux with our patches to sleep all the time. We've got Debian derivative because, well, I'm Debian developer, so I found something similar to Debian in spirit in St. Petersburg branch of Siemens, actually. They released it, and they just, then I pick it up, then they left it, so I had to, continue to develop it on my own, actually. We've got Glibc, just usual. We've got Xserver, and it turned out to be good decision because it's really easy to develop anything for Xserver and not for some embedded atrocity, actually. We've got Enlightenment Foundation libraries for our graphics stack. We don't really patch them, so it's just a standard desktop Enlightenment. We've got usual TCP networking, SSH, rsync, everything you want to. And I usually use rsync to copy my books from desktop to my ebook reader, which is really nice. And we've got a lot of GUI on top of it because we have to write it all because standard GUI wants to pop up menus and wants mouse and so on. We're going to dump our Debian derivative because it takes too much time to just maintain it. We're going to go to for the OpenVRT. It's not really that hard because all our GUI is pretty much works everywhere. And we're going to replace glibc with uclibc to get some free memory. But it's just technical details. And then to the discoveries I made during the project. Memory is precious. I always knew about it, but now I figured out it's really precious. GTK plus doesn't work. Because it will just fill out all the memory on the first run, and there will be no memory for anything else. You can't run Perl, Python, or Ruby because they will eat all the memory with one script. You can't really use glibc for something big because it will also use a lot of memory. And even basic libraries like xlib, which is, you can't, you hardly can imagine x without xlib, but those are not really useful and take a lot of memory. It's interesting to see how much you could strip from the usual Linux and have it still functional. But Xserver is really small. There are a lot of people saying why do you use x? It's so huge, so bloated, it uses gigs of RAM. No, you could have a server in under 1 meg, and it works. Who knew that? You don't have a lot of CPU around, so even loading libraries is really a delay for starting application. Yeah, I could never thought about, thinking how to link less libraries to the application because it slows down the startup. You could easily get a 10-second startup just for linking this wrong library or linking this too much libraries. Perl, Python, and Ruby are really slow. You can't reuse them in embedded. The only scripting language I found which is okay is Lua, and everything else looks like it was written in last year, not 15 years ago when the computers were slow. Who knew it? And hey, Xserver doesn't need CPU. It's probably the one piece of software from the dark ages of computing, which still runs on small CPUs, on small memory, and it does it really, really fast. Interesting to see. And another discovery is that PC hardware is really heaven. Embedded stuff is so vastly different from the PC world that you have to put really a lot of resources in just supporting new devices because every device has its own drivers, has its own wires, which are soldered just to the CPU. So you have to write your own drivers. You have to run your own thunk drivers for the drivers that's already around. So supporting new, just another hardware is it's really a non-trivial problem. Well, it was a real change from the desktop. For me, desktop guy, it was, well, how do they live that? And why? And now I understand why the hardware development teams in companies are so big, like Nokia and so on. Some hardware is funny. This one is, well, it doesn't look very good. It's a part of printed circuit board of readers. And you see the LED, which is never shown to the user because it's under the cover. And it's part of the USB stick, which is just put into the PC printed circuit board and connected to the USB controller on the CPU. Well, without any thought, without even removing this LED, which is, well, which flashes when you write something to the USB stick, and it flashes when you read something from it, but, well, just kept there for no reason. Chinese people don't like, well, really tuning their designs. Well, so actually, our project is in real need for kernel hackers because of what I said. The embedded stuff is really much harder than desktop stuff. You need to have reverse engineer every device around. You need to beg vendors for the source code. Sometimes they give you the source code, sometimes they don't if they are from China. Then you have to beg for resellers. Then you have to write to GPL violations guys. Then GPL violations guys threaten the resellers. Then resellers start panicking and ask for source code from the Chinese guys, and they get it eventually in 2 years when you have already reverse engineered all the hardware. But it works. So the kernel hackers with some free time could have a try to, well, get another reader supported by OpenGPOT if they like reading books. User space is not really complicated. We've got all the basic building blocks already available. So, well, for every new device, it's mostly kernel. It's kernel tasks. And the development team will help with any user space issues which could arise. So, well, that's probably it about the OpenGPOT. Here are some contacts, and I would love to see any questions if there are.
One question. Do any of the devices supported by OpenGPOT use the OpenBIOS, the Core BIOS
there is
implementation?
Not really, because, well, on the ARM and MIPS device, you don't have a BIOS, actually. Processor just starts running code from some piece of flash. So, well, there is just a bootloader there.
And compared to FB Reader, the one I prefer to use for reading books?
We use FB Reader for all the fiction stuff. You've got FB Reader and Cool Reader, and you could choose which one to use. So, well, if you like FB Reader, you'll get it in the open port.
Okay, tell us a little bit about what's so difficult with supporting technical books. What kind of qualities with technical books are you having difficulties with?
Well, first of all, Deja Vu and PDF are really CPU consuming to render. So, well, it's not easy to have this real-time panning and scanning and turning pages. It's really painful to wait while it renders, especially if it's a difficult illustration with a lot of vector graphics. Besides that, the ebook readers are usually small. There are a few big readers. Well, the Amazon one is, I think, not A4. You could see by the size of palms. You could use it for, well, PDFs, but others are really small. It's like, well, this size whole reader, and the screen is either 6 inches or 5 inches, so you can't have really a whole page on the screen, and it's due to slowness of ink, it's not a good experience to just jump around.
Okay, so this has more to do with the formats being of a kind of a printing or graphical kind, instead
yes.
of the text free flow that you call for yeah. The fictional content.
Exactly.
But if one would use a kind of a fictional type useful format for writing technical books, would that solve some of the problems? And
No.
Nobody does that?
I actually should have clarified it that by fiction formats I meant free flow formats, and by technical formats I meant the fixed formats like, well, PDF, this lot of which are good for illustrations.
Okay.
Any other questions?
What kind of CPUs, how much memory, what kind of resources do you have available on the typical ebook reader?
It's from 32 megabytes of memory to maybe 128. It's usual. Yeah, there are smaller memories, but not that common. CPUs are usually ARMs or MIPS. It is 233 MHz up to 600 MHz. And storage is flash from 64 megabytes to a couple of gigs. Well, that's all. So, well, in the lowest configuration, you have to really squeeze the system inside it, into the device.
Do you customize the reader software to be able to easily download books from these resources available on the web with free books?
Not yet, because none of the readers we have supported at the moment have an internet connectivity built in. And if you have attached the USB cable, you'll be much easier to download it by yourself on the PC. But when the Amazon Kindle support will eventually be added, we will need to think about it. And there is support in FB Reader already, so it should work without much hacking, I think.
Have you seen any fun alternatives use of an ebook reader other than to read ebooks?
Excuse me, could you repeat?
Have you seen any fun alternative uses of a ebook reader?
Ah, the device,
than
yeah.
Reading an ebook.
Well, I saw it as a second screen. well, let me think about it. No, I think that's it. It's really a specialized device.
The slowness of the update, is it only if you have to update the entire page, or can you, if you update only a small part of the page, is that quicker?
It depends on the screen controller. Smaller parts of pages update more quicker at most of them, but well, it's not magnitude faster. You could get, 3/10 of second for several pixels. It's a really slow start up, then updating pixels, and slow tear down. And some of the controllers are really funny. It's like that this LED, one of the controllers uses a serial link to the single memory, location to push, hold this uncompressed image to the screen quite slowly.
Do you, by the way, know why the X server is claimed to be so slow and so CPU hungry?
Probably they should attribute it to the GNOME or KDE instead.
No, actually, it's when you run it on a normal desktop, it will memory map the entire video frame, and with a huge resolution, that will be a lot of memory. that appears to be a part of the X process. And of course, updating all the pixels is taking a lot of time because the resolution is very high. Yeah. So with smaller resolutions, it's a smaller one. If it's a huge resolution, it's a bigger one.
Well, actually, the map at memory is not really a part of XR memory because it will never get mapped actually into the main memory.
And they show up on top, and that's what users
that's
normally.
The reason. And you know, Kick server on desktop could easily use a gigs of memory just by loading images poured in by GNOME and KDE apps as well.
If you buy one of these devices, and you want to put the software on them, how hard is it to put this software on the devices?
It really depends on the device.
Okay.
Our first target, which is Hanlin V3, was really good at it because it had a bootloader in separate flash storage, which contained the flash code. So you could just wipe out the original firmware and install your one, and then go back without any problems. There are devices which are more delicate. Usually it involves either, usually you have to worry to not touch the bootloader, because if you touch it, it won't boot anymore. And we've got some so-called leave SD mode, which uses which replaces the kernel with our one by using the fact all the vendors. Code runs everything as root. So we just replace their kernel with ours using some backdoor we find, like running the game or pressing the keys during the boot, and we load our firmware, and it works completely separate. So you don't even need to touch your reader. You just need to put this SD card in it and press the button while it boots. But it all depends on the reader. You have to find tricks and workarounds and backdoors in it.
But that's documented on your homepage, what devices you like, which are hard to use?
Yes. We've got a lot of such a detailed technical information about all readers we have to touch. And there are findings about how to replace the firmware, how to run our code.
Yeah, okay.
Quick follow-up on that one is the reason that you'd switch to OpenVRT kernel and operating system. Is that because of better community support and better device support, or?
It's better community support because we didn't switch it yet because it's in progress.
Yeah.
The whole reason is to stop maintaining our old distro. It was me who was maintaining all the distro from the tool chain to all the libraries, and I really got tired of it. So we shopped for other distros around. We found Open Embedded. We remembered how several years ago we tried to use it and were horrified by it. So we didn't choose Open Embedded. So we found OpenVRT and seemed sane enough to base our work on it. And it's really lively, so you don't need to update whole set of packages by yourself.
Have you tried to flash some ebook readers that have anti-tampering devices or sources in them?
I know there was some work on device which encrypts the firmware updates, which is the main way to update to replace the firmware. But I don't know how well it went because the person just disappeared.
Is that the possibility to use some external devices via USB?
Theoretically. But
and could you do this also interactively with, for example, have a navigation device and have some coordinates there and present maps or something like that for navigation purposes? Is that an idea, or is this just
It's an idea.
Not viable.
It's always in the to-do list, but you know, most of the devices don't have an USB host side hardware, so well, you can't do it, actually. There are several people who tried to hack something to hook the GPS through the serial port, but they didn't really went really long with it, because you need to write your own mapping software for adapt for ink. But yes, it's always a topic which it's a topic which resurfaces from time to time, but just nobody has got around. Nobody with enough time and patience did it.
No more questions?
Oh, thank you for your questions.
Then I'll just have to say thank you very much, and that was a really interesting talk.
Thank you for listening.